thank you, Prison Radio, for this opportunity. My name is Romel Ingram, MDOC number 398240. And I'm locally in the Michigan Department of Corrections at the Gus Harrison Correctional Facility. And it is a state of complete, total disrepair right now due to COVID and due to things that have been implemented in place long before COVID even started. Now, the facility where I'm at is also a mental health facility. So it's a place where you have two units that are RTP, which is residential treatment program. And that only adds to the stress, pressure, and irreparable harm that's being done to prisoners and their families. To try to be as brief as possible, what it boils down to is that the standard for the federal courts for the response to COVID-19 is that the response is reasonable. And what the Michigan prison system has done, and Gus Harrison in particular, has found a way to make things look as if there are a reasonable response when it really is just smoke and mirrors and a three-card molly. Case in point, there are N95 masks that we've been getting for the first time. They've been issued to us here, and they're somewhere in the unit, and they've been somewhere in the unit since, I don't know, maybe at least a week ago today, but they still haven't been passed out. And when you try to approach staff and speak to them about it, you just get, you know, it gets passed off to another member of administration. Yet they're supposed to be passed out today. They finally gave us a date today, and then the main administrator who runs our unit or our unit supervisor doesn't show up for work. So that's just one point is with the mask. Another thing is health care. In Michigan, the health care that runs over, you know, the contractor is WellPath. Now, from my understanding and my looking into it, WellPath is a large conglomerate that does a lot of correctional medical services, and they took over for Corizon. Corizon used to be number one as far back as 2018 as far as revenue brought in from corrections health care. But when WellPath merged two different corrections medical services and another one that I can't really remember right now, they recently took over just months ago. And calling you and speaking as a person who's on the mental health caseload, who has a prescription for psychotropic medication, I'm currently calling you after being in a situation where I had a psychotic break due to having to stop medication that I was not given information about that could cause me to be infertile. And I was taken off of Medline trying to get that taken care of. Then I was paneled and put in segregation due to having complications and forced to be put on a medication. And now the medication I've been forced to put on, I have no prescription for after taking it for about a week. So now after taking a week of a new med that I have to get adjusted to, they have no prescription here. And I have no idea where they were giving me the 7 to 9 pills that they gave me for the days that they did have me on the medication. And that medication is Abilify. But that's just, and I don't know if that's to do with the new management, which is WellPath. I don't know if it's the Dr. Isu, which is the doctor who's the psychiatrist, who's actually not even a doctor. She's a nurse practitioner, which is a lot of things which you'll find with these contracted services. You won't be seeing a real, I don't know if they are necessarily PhDs, MDs, or what the doctors, but they are nurse practitioners. So people, if I was, no, I'm a layman. I'm 37 years of age, nothing much more past a 12th grade education beside a bachelor's degree in religion and church ministry that I was able to obtain through correspondence. But I do not think these people should be qualified to be professionals, especially in the mental health field, when you have to deal with people who are in situations where the slightest thing can exacerbate suicidal thoughts and ideation. And also the facility, if someone were to look into it, there's been numerous suicides since the beginning of the COVID pandemic, and mainly, most especially in level four, where you have, I have a friend of mine, a man by the name of Ricardo Farrell. He's a very prolific prison writer and editor. He does pieces for the Voice of Detroit publication, and he's done pieces because he works as a prisoner observation aide. Now, a prisoner observation aide is those a prisoner who's paid to sit on what they call it a suicidal inmate, because the MDOC does not have the money to have their staff do it. And frankly, I think that's a better idea anyway, because many staff could care less about an inmate that takes their life as long as they know there's going to be another body that's going to come and fill that bunk. And they're still going to get a check for about roughly $40,000 to continue the engine of mass incarceration going. Now, but just to slow down and recap, so again, this is Romel Ingram calling you from Gus Harrison Asian Correctional Facility that's in a state of complete disrepair. You also have tension. You also have hostile environments. I'm on the Warden's Forum. I'm the Unit 1 Block Representative. I'm a secretary to our chairman, Mr. Randy James, who yesterday, at a meeting before our warden, he, for lack of trying to find a better word, he made the statement after giving a large caveat that he was trying to be respectful, trying not to cross any lines. and trying to warn the prison of the situations they're causing, they're bringing. But he made the statement that you guys are going to start a riot immediately, the record scratched, because in that position with the warden, the deputy warden, with the business manager, that might, that's not, that you can, you know, it's a red flag word, but the thing is, this young man who's been incarcerated for 15 years, I'm not sure of his exact age, but he's younger than me, less than 40 or 37. He's trying to cope with these issues, and he's trying to let them know what's going on, and trying to let them know the hostile environment, which would have been the choice of words I would have used, and that gentlemen are coming to him and wanted to do violent things, you know, to staff and things like that. And that's a security risk and a security threat. He's trying to warn them, but he used the wrong word, and immediately they stopped. No communication. He was kicked out of the meeting. We can't get a dialogue. We can't. You see, we are living and we are being judged. We are the same people in their eyes that we were for whatever we've done the years ago, and whatever gave us this number and put this number on our back. And for some of us, we didn't do a thing, such as Larry Smith, who's part of a cadre of exonerees in Michigan, who's growing more and more because you have a lot of people who have just been peddled through the system and did not commit a crime. You have another Larry, by a man by the name of Larry Mansell, inmate number 140325, who's currently putting his case before the Court of Appeals because he's in here for a crime he did not commit. He's a man of 64 years of age. And he has some underlying conditions. He doesn't know if he can make it through one more bout of COVID. We currently have 157 is the death count, I believe. And we know that count to be false because there are certain inmates, and you know, inmates that went to the hospital with COVID-like symptoms, but their names never made the list. And we rarely see the names on the list. They've given us the list once, but other than that, it's just been numbers. Because to these people, we are no more than numbers. In particular, numbers of revenue, numbers of a check, numbers that feeds this $2.1 billion. I repeat, $2.1 billion beast of a machine that is the Michigan prison system, that is what keeps Michigan driving in many rural towns, because many people, this is their only source of income or job support. And I feel for them as well, because I know that they have mouths to feed their family. They have children. Speaking of children, I have two daughters of my own that, due to mistakes made, whatever it may be, wrong association, getting caught up in the criminal system, I'm not speaking to neither one of them. And all almost going on 3 years, because it just broke down. It broke down because it gets hard when you have this man who knew your mother, who had what he thought was love for your mother, was love at that time. But then things happen. He goes to prison, and because of that, you at 1 year old being Jeanne Ingram, or you at a month old being Charnay Bernard, my two daughters, you have to grow up, and you have to. Excuse me, you have to learn who your father is, who this man is, who you can only see through either glass partitions or being shackled around in handcuffs or being monitored by others. No private time, no quality time. This is the machine that the criminal justice system in America has built. This is the so-called rehabilitation. This is why I see people stabbed. This is why I see master locks put in socks and go across people's heads. This is why Officer Lennox, to mention another name, gets a pencil put almost to his brain, through his ear, and busts his eardrum burst to where he has to be forced to early retirement. This is why Randy Rumler comes to prison during a pandemic and becomes the only custody officer in the state of Michigan to die from the COVID virus. Mind you, I said that again, the one. Again, we're at 157. As far as the body count of inmates, but the only one officer died here at Adrian, a chow hall officer. Whereas the whole thing that kept the last, most latest outbreak that we have, the status we're on now, that the food service is trying to say that we're not on, so they can keep food service going and stop using bleach to clean tables, which they've done today. Although the warden told me yesterday that we will be on outbreak status for at least 2 weeks. That's been one of the main reasons. The chow hall is a super spreader. For those on the outside who are wondering what's going on in prisons and why the numbers are so striking, especially in states like Michigan, California, and Texas, your chow halls are your super spreaders, because everyone is fed through that same place. Everyone is shoveled through there. It's mass movement. No matter what they do, unless it's completely shut down, which they can't do, which they don't really have the body to do. Well, they actually do. It'll just be slower. It comes down to, do we have to wait and just have to worry about getting meals stretched to us every day? Or did it come to the table and find another way to feed us? Or you just keep it running and let the virus run rampant? And they've chose option B. They've continued to let the virus run rampant. I'm pretty sure this might be coming to a close on time, but Rouse versus Washington. There's a case in the Eastern District of Michigan, Rouse versus Washington, and it's a case out of Parnell. That is the only case I'm familiar with. There has been a class action suit that has survived as far as whether or not Michigan has possibly been unreasonable in their response to the COVID virus. So anybody who has a chance, check out the case Rouse versus Washington, because they survived, they have a class action. And anything you can do to help Michigan prisoners find a way to become part of that class, because it's not just SMT, which is the facility code for Parnell Correctional Facility located in Jackson, Michigan. It's the entire Michigan Department of Corrections. And I really can't speak for other states, but I'm pretty sure it's beyond, but it's the entire population of those who cannot care for themselves, who are in the custody of others, and whose lives are devalued, are greatly devalued. And I encourage people to check out online Ricardo Farrell's article, Why Are Prisoners' Lives Devalued, which is soon be coming out on a website, Hip Hop Humanism, which is by a woman by the name of Jay Renee, is a sponsor for and a founder of. And then again, that's Why Are Prisoners' Lives Devalued. But check out that case, and specifically the part where it shows about the Eighth Amendment. The Eighth Amendment is cruel and unusual punishment. And I'm calling you from a position where that is what I endure every day, from the time that my eyelids open and wake up to every place I go to the time they fall again, a punishment that is cruel and unusual. But it's not just me alone. It is every number that makes up a penal number. It is every face that you see on your OTIS, which is the Michigan Offender Tracking Information System, or whatever state you may look at, or federal prison. I just ask that America wake up and that America realizes that this isn't beautiful. It's an ugly picture. It's a hideous picture. And just because you ride by it on your highway and you see bars and gates and walls and concertina wire, you can't see it. I'm telling you firsthand, it is a hideous picture. It is repulsive. It is the closest thing you're going to see to a corpse or disfigurement. A disfigurement similar to the face of Emmett Till that Mamie Till wanted people to see during the Civil Rights Movement. But the thing is that you won't even see it. It's like you have to have a different type of sight, a different eye open to see it. But that's what's going on. The body is disfigured, it's putrid, it's decomposing. And you may not see it, and they cover it up, and they try to make it look good and paint it up, but we're dying. We're dying, and these people are people that are going to, some of them are going to come out and be your neighbors, or there's going to be a bill, a part of your tax revenue. So I just ask that you please, please do something to help Michigan prisoners, prisons in general, especially those like myself who have no business in prison, long ago rehabilitated. And I just want to mention the name William Garrison, a juvenile life and representative of juvenile lifers who came here as children. William Garrison would have been going home in days, but succumbed to the COVID-19 virus due to the way Michigan is handling this and due to a judge who just wanted to make a formality for television and try to look tough on crime.
These commentaries are recorded by Prison Radio.